Hi, this is Allison Gingras, host of A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras, your on-air book club. A Seeking Heart features daily live discussions, weekly giveaways, and author interviews. We don't just review books, we share them, and you're invited to participate by calling in or posting your comments on social media. The best part, no reading necessary. I got you covered. Please visit A Seeking Heart show page on breadboxmedia.com for showtimes and featured books. Welcome to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. This morning, Sarah Reinhardt from SnoringScholar.com and I are going to discuss parenting. We have a new book out from Dr. Rigorundi has a new book out from Servant Books. Advice Worth. I love that man. So, Sarah, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. As I interrupt your intro, sorry.
That's all right. Interrupt away. It is Monday, and I really don't expect anything less from you. Does that not sound right?
Uh-oh.
That's why I have you on, because you make me laugh. So we're going to look at Advice Worth Ignoring, How Tuning Out the Experts Can Make You a Better Parent. Dr. Rigorundi, again, Servant Books, Franciscan Media, and my guest is Sarah Reinhardt, SnoringScholar.com. See, got the intro in. Now, I don't know about you, Sarah, but I kind of consider myself a subpar parent.
Ding. I'm in training. My kids have been training me for years.
Part of me feels like I don't really have any more chances at this. I have a 21-year-old and an 18-year-old. And I feel what's been done is done. But I do have the 10-year-old. In fact, when we decided to have a third child, well, the Lord decided, because he sent us to China to adopt her. I said we had to outsource because we didn't do very well with the first two. But I thought this would be my do-over and I would do everything differently this time. And you know what?
That sounds like setting yourself up for failure.
It did. But and I'm really hard on myself. I don't know. Are you difficult?
Am I hard on myself? Nope, not at all. Nope. Not hard on myself ever. I give myself the break. Ooh. I'm lying in case you can't tell. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the nature of women in general. Like the moms I've talked to, the friends I have. I mean, women are hard on each other.
Mm. We are.
On themselves. I don't necessarily mean, I give other moms passes all day long. I'm, you know, maybe the most non-judgmental of other people now that I have kids.
You know, it's funny you're going to say that, because when I start to, you know, say that I feel like I really let my oldest go, he is ADHD, oppositional defiant when he was younger. And I feel like he was so difficult. And when I start to talk about how I feel like I failed him, my best friend since high school, which makes 30 years as my friend, she always stops me. She's like, are you kidding? Will you shut up? She's like, think about where he was and where he is now. And you know, he would have temper tantrums where you would have to physically restrain him and hold him down. He was a tough kid, and now he holds a full-time job. And
That's awesome.
Yeah, and he's not defiant. I mean, he's reckless sometimes, but what 21-year-old isn't.
Yeah, I was just going to say, isn't he male?
Yes.
I mean, not that you have to be reckless if you're male.
No, but he slid off the roof of our house. Into 5 feet of snow, because we're New Englanders. It's not like
Well, thank goodness you live in New England and not Ohio. In Ohio, you know, he'd hit the ground and be dead.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
or have a concussion, you know?
Yes. For the less severe, or a broken bone, right? No. Right. He's done some. I think that almost the best and the worst thing I've ever had is the social media, where I can follow his antics. And he actually allows me to follow him on Snapchat. He probably has his own fake Snapchat someplace.
No, you know what? Some things is just better to put it out there. So let me ask you this, because you would be the pro mom, because you've got the older kids. What's the best advice you've ever gotten as a parent?
Okay, this has nothing to do with our children, but in a way it does. The best advice I ever got was twofold. Never let the sun go down on your anger, And if you fight in front of your spouse with your spouse, make sure you bake up in front of them, in front of the kids, that is. And the first advice, actually didn't realize it came from scripture, but it does. Don't let this, and I actually used to know where
Proverbs
it was. But
or Proverbs, something, right?
Yes, I think you're right. And that's such good advice. And that's true with your children. I mean, reconciliation is very important. Obviously, it's the heart of the gospel, forgiveness, mercy. But, you know, if you have an argument with your children, like, don't try to rationalize with them right that moment, but always make sure before you go to bed, you make up and everything's good. And the other advice about if you fight with your spouse to make up with them in front of the kids is that if you are always perfect in front of your children, then they get this false ideal of what a relationship looks like. And that's like the worst thing you can do for them. But for them to see you, you know, hash things out with your spouse and, you're giving them such great skills. First, you're teaching them that life, you know, you're not perfect and that you have to work at things. And then you're modeling how to have that conflict resolution. And really those two things have been the best advice, but both for my marriage and for raising my children. What was the best advice you ever got?
You know, I can't remember who said it, but it's advice that has always come back to me. And I think it's like kind of out there in the ether. I want to give Danielle Bean credit for it from her blog, but it might have been Elizabeth Foss or one of those. When I was kind of a brand new mom, one kid who's a toddler, I remember reading that using that analogy of being in an airplane and you have to put the oxygen mask on yourself before you put it on your child. And that reminder that you have to take care of yourself before you can take care of other people well. And that's something that I always have to come back to, which is why it's the best advice I got, is because it's something that kind of speaks to my natural inclinations to, you know, fail. Like that's where I fail. I fail in taking care of I will let myself just run ragged and nearly die, you know, and martyr myself in many ways. And, you know, oh, poor me. And so that, I mean, I guess that's not parenting advice, but yet to me it is, because as parents, you know, as moms, as parents, we're taking care of other people all the time. And it's really easy. And in some ways, I think there's almost a culture of idolization of our children. And you can focus so much on your children and are these things right for them? And you can totally neglect, like, if you're not taking time to breathe yourself, you're not going to be healthy. And what will your children take from that? You know, what will they learn?
Absolutely. I love that analogy. Absolutely. We need to take care of ourselves. See, the other thing about the sun going down on the on your anger made me think of when you were saying that one of the things with my older children is that regret. I hate regret, but I feel like there's so many things I could have, should have, would have done differently if I'd known better. Or, you know, you're 28, you're 30. It seems like you should be old enough to know better, but it's a whole new like world. And I myself wasn't taking care of myself. I was clinically depressed when I had my first child and really struggling mentally. And I didn't have good role models myself. So I made a lot of mistakes. But the thing that I'm the most proud of in my parenting is sitting down with my young adult son and apologizing. So here's what I think I did right. And here's what I know I did wrong. And can you forgive me for that? And because you can't go back and change the past. Yeah. All you can do is embrace now and make better the future. So I'm going to be your mom for the rest of my life. So I would really like to do good by you. And I think it was a moment that really strengthened us, because I had a horrible relationship with my mother. And you know what? An apology from her would still go so far. And I know I'm never going to get one. So stop beating myself up over that.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, that's a good point. I had this realization, I want to say 2 or 3 years ago. And I think it was, I've become really good friends with one of my sister-in-laws on my husband's side. So my husband and her are brother and sister. And, you know, we're all wounded. And I think that was my realization, was we are all wounded by our parents, all of us. Even the people who I look at their parents and go, you had perfect parents. You know what? They're walking around with something. And I just, this realization that I had to look at both my mother-in-law and my sister-in-law and say, you know, you guys have to forgive each other. Mm-hmm. Even though from where I sit, it looks like you guys had the perfect life. I mean, no, they didn't have the perfect life. But you know what I mean? It's so different than what I experienced. And how can you not get along? And they do, don't, they get along. But there's this, there was like this aha moment, like, oh my goodness, all of us, if we have children, it, like if we have human interactions, we are going to be looking at those other humans in our life and saying, you know, I'm sorry. Right. And maybe even saying, you know, I forgive you, even though you don't even know that you need to say you're sorry. Like, 'cause I have people like that. I absolutely have, you know, I don't know if I want to call them parent figures in my life who, you know, if I look back, like they owe me an apology. Well, you know, and certainly I probably owe them an apology too, because I was a kid. I was once 12. Oh my word. And now I have a 12-year-old and I appreciate the, what that means.
Oh, that's funny.
It's definitely, and you use the word, you know, that human interaction, all interactions come with pain. They come with hurting each other, either intentionally or unintentionally. And I think that that power of an apology, that contriteness, like think about what that does with our relationship with God and how powerful the sacrament of reconciliation is. And what does that sacrament do is it brings healing. I used to think it was my get out of hell free card, but basically it's much more.
Wait, you mean it's not?
If you get hit by the bus leaving the confessional, yes.
Well, maybe not even then. Well, you know, and for me, I think reconciliation and confession helped me understand that. Like, I have to always go back to God and make it right. And how hard that is, oh my goodness, we're all that way. Like, that's just how we are. That's what original sin is right there. That fact that we're all walking around with kind of this, like, you almost have to be on guard a little bit with other people.
And if I think about how many things I have done, the multitude that have harmed my relationship with the Lord, and yet he forgives me again and again, how can I not then give that same mercy that's been given to me to my parent? And my son has graciously, I think, offered it to me as well. Much more this morning with Sarah Reinhart, snoringscholar.com. We're going to be looking at advice worth ignoring. You're listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Welcome back to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. I am joined this morning by Sarah Reinhart. You can learn more about Sarah and read some of her fabulous writing over at snoringscholar.com. Love that. One of the best URLs ever. That's wonderful. Snoringscholar.com. And we are kind of diving into parenting today. I'm an imperfect perfect parent. That's how I refer to myself, the imperfect perfect parent. And we're looking at advice worth ignoring, how tuning out the experts can make you a better parent. New book from Dr. Ray Gurundi, one of my heroes in the world. I'm an adoptive parent. So, and he's 10, I think all 10 of his children are adopted. So he's somebody that I really look to, and he's funny as heck. So if you can be funny and teach me something, you have my attention. So Sarah, let's dive into some of the actual advice that he tells us we should ignore. One of the things he talks about in here is this idea of underestimating the strength of a child's will can lead to a pinball discipline. So bouncing, he writes, from approach to approach, searching vainly for something that will finally move this immovable youngster. And he calls it pinball discipline. And he says it teaches the child to keep resisting, that mom and dad will eventually tire and relent and look for something else. And it teaches him to persevere beyond our stamina. So yes, I am really, really guilty of this, especially with my oldest, who again had the oppositional defiant. And I was forever coming up with charts and stickers and just all these different kind of discipline techniques. And I would do them for a little bit and I'd feel like it would work for a little bit, and then he'd figure out the system. So I felt like I had to change the system to keep it, and it was ridiculous. It was forever reading and coming up with new, how are you with like discipline? Do your children even need discipline plans? They seem like they're pretty well behaved.
Right. No, my little angels just don't need anything, Allison. I'm so glad you caught on to that. Never a problem in Reinhardt House. I don't relate with any of this. Nope. Don't know what you're talking about.
I picked the wrong guest again, right?
I know. I mean, you should have found somebody whose children are not saints in training.
That's kind of funny.
Lisa discipline. Yes, right. Her kids are grown, so...
We were talking about how our children are all saints in training and saints in the making, saints in training. So it's just kind of funny that you used that.
I've hung out with her a bit. So
yeah, a little bit.
She off on me. Yeah. I mean, just looking through his discipline section. I mean, listen to this list. Don't tell a toddler no. Don't delay discipline. Don't make your child fear you. Don't discipline when you're angry. I mean, I fail. Like, I actually, most of his, I've read his other, some of his other books. So when I was looking for parenting advice, I'd heard him on the radio and I thought, this is a guy I can get behind. So I've never really bought into some of the softer discipline.
And of course, those are all advice to ignore.
Yeah, you're ignoring that. Like, don't tell a toddler no. If you're not going to ever tell your toddler no, you're not going to talk to them. I mean, they're trying to kill themselves. A toddler, by their nature, is out to kill themselves. It's amazing. They make it to the next stage.
And isn't it ironic that the toddler's favorite word is no, unless it's coming from its parent?
My toddler's favorite word is hey. Like somebody's got food he wants. He's got, hey. But yeah.
Your toddler's one of my favorite people in the world. Love that little guy.
Don't live with him. You just get to see pictures of him.
Yes. Not always at his finest moment.
I love this. You know, I love his, he has a whole book on discipline called Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime that probably, hold on, I'm looking, 2003. The copy I have, which I dug out before the show, and I read this book and just went, okay, great. I mean, whenever I feel like I need help as a parent, I usually do look up Dr. Ray or, you know, listen to him for an hour or two on the radio, and it just kind of sets your, it's like listening to a wise uncle or or grandparent or, you know, I mean, just, I don't know, the newfangled psychological approach to things is mostly a four-letter word that begins with C and ends with P, and I'm not sure if I can say it on your show, but it has an R in the middle.
It's crap. You can say that.
Oh, that, yeah. Well, I mean, but it's based in love of your child, so I think that is the right basis for discipline, right? I mean, that's where you need to be coming from. The reason you want to discipline your child is because you want to raise a civilized human being. You know, you don't want, like, little Neanderthals running around, and that's...
And the word discipline actually means to teach.
So
I used to be in elementary. I mean, early childhood elementary school. No, it was early. I started elementary school. I did 1 year of learning how to be a teacher like that. Went to the school once and went, yeah, this isn't for me. Then I switched to early childhood education. And, you know, that's always stuck out in my head that discipline means to teach. And so to not discipline your child and it is actually doing them a disservice because you're not teaching them. Like you said, not to be a I can't even say those big words, Neanderthal. There it goes.
Right.
But that you want to give them the tools that they need. And I think you can always, you'll never be wrong if you err on the side of love when it comes to taking care of, to disciplining your child. But you can, I suppose, that's probably not the best way of putting that, because if you are afraid out of, you know, them loving you back, that you can't say or do things that are tough because you're afraid they won't love you, then that's not going to be helpful. Like, kids like limits. They need limits. Boundaries, limits, rules. Those are all really important for a child's well-being.
I want limits and boundaries. Like, you know, like all of us do, right? Mm-hmm. No matter what we say about freedom, you can't be free if there's not a framework around.
Hence the commandments.
Right.
I mean, our Heavenly Father knows that.
You don't have to figure it out. Like, yeah, I say kids like it. They're not going to tell you they like it, right? They're not going to jump and skip for joy, but
yes.
It is truly how they know you you love them.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm repeating the old saws myself.
And I can say, as a parent of a young adult child, he's 21, and my nearly 18-year-old, there are moments where they will kind of look back at their childhood and say, you know, I didn't like it at the time when you wouldn't let me go with this group and do this or that, but I see now that you probably protected me from something, and they're thankful. They're like, I'm grateful.
Right.
Like, it might have been fun for the moment, but it's much better that I didn't have that lifelong, scars or memories or worse. I said, well, you know, it was
hard. On the flip that you made them do something that they didn't want to do at the time. I mean, because it goes both ways. There's the keeping away and the making something extra too, you know, like,
yeah, good point.
You made me get up and feed the horses or the dogs or the guinea pigs or the other people in the house or.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't
need any help with my other and whatever.
Exactly.
I'm done. Sorry.
No, it's just that you faded out. I didn't mean to talk over you.
Oh.
We just lost each other for a minute there. But I think there is such a value to that discipline of teaching them how to, you know, make their own bed and clean up, and both my boys do their own laundry, which is such a wonderful thing. And their future wives are going to so love me, if not for that one thing alone.
Right. Except if they don't know how to sort, then you won't so much be a favorite.
Well, their mother doesn't sort her laundry. I just use Color Fast liquid. And so they won't know how to sort. We do. I have one of those wash machines that's a top loader. It's a jumbo that you can fit your entire week's worth of laundry
into. You can't.
Yeah, you can. Well, per person. Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm like, no, because I have a jumbo size top loader. Doesn't, like, I no sooner get to the bottom of a hamper than it miraculously refills. It's sort of like, you know, in the Old Testament, the what was it, the widow and that prophet whose name I'm forgetting, and
Elijah?
He said, like, if you make me bread, you won't run out of oil and flour. That's how my laundry hampers are. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. And dishes, like, yes, it was Elijah.
Oh, and dishes, same thing. Dishes too. The people keep wearing clothes and eating.
I know. I just can't get them for 1 minute. But my mother-in-law tells me that I will someday miss that there's laundry everywhere and fingerprints everywhere and dirty shoes in the middle of the floor. And I can't imagine missing those things, but she assures me.
I think when they say miss, what they really mean is you'll miss that you were younger. That's my takeaway.
You'll miss the people who are...
Yeah, you'll miss the people. You'll miss that you yourself are no longer younger. You'll miss that, you know, the cute aspect is gone. And I think you also forget all those, you know, painful moments that come with raising a young family.
Yes. And that's a good thing.
Yeah. Like, people who say that to me, I'm always like, yes, but I won't miss getting up in the middle of the night because somebody's screaming or having a night terror, or, you know, there's all these things I won't miss.
Yeah. I won't miss the middle of the night puking, and my daughter, I love her pieces, but whenever she gets a cold, it's just gross. She has no concept of how to blow her nose, and there's and I'm a germaphobe, so there's just snot everywhere. But I will miss the cuddles already. My 18-year-old son was my cuddle bug, and now, like, if I even try to hug him, he looks at my husband and says, "She's touching me."
That's funny.
He's like, it's touching me. Make it go away. He's teasing, but I will, I guess it's just waiting for those grandchildren. We have much more to talk to this morning with Sarah Reinhart right here on A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras on Breadbox Media. Please stay tuned.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Welcome back to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. I'm joined this morning by Sarah Reinhart. She blogs over at snoringscholar.com. She also has a great list of books that she's read and can recommend for you to read. I love that list. We are talking about a book today that I'm very excited that I got to read, Advice Worth Ignoring, How Tuning Out the Experts Can Make You a Better Parent. And part of me had a little twinge as I read it because I've two kids that perhaps my influence as a parent, or I've kind of missed the boat because they're 21 and 18.
Aww.
But the 10-year-old, I still have some time with her. But I think that we're talking at the very beginning of the show is how hard parents are on themselves. We only see the mistakes we've made or the coulda, shoulda, wouldas. But I think that, and I love what Dr. Ray talks about, is a little bit of that. Trust that your instincts, trust that you, because you love this child, you've done much more good for them than harm for them. And we were talking about discipline don'ts. And I know before the commercial, I said I was going to do one thing, but I'm changing my mind. And we're going to go back. That's what I do. We're going to go back to those discipline don'ts. Because I think that these are things, of course, that most of us heard. Either our parents did with us or we did with our children, that we need to kind of just give ourselves a pass on and realize that it was okay if you did do them, but it's also things that you don't need to adhere to, if that makes any sense. So the one of them, this idea, don't delay discipline. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about kids in church. I don't know how your kids...
Oh, you are so brave. Okay, go.
My kids in church were a nightmare. And I don't. It's almost like you walk through the door, and I think about St. John Don Bosco, and he talked about the demons on the shoulders that try to take your attention the minute you get in there. He has like a dream book, a book of his dreams, and one of them is this vision of us in mass with these demons trying to get our attention And I think that those demons take over my children the minute we walk through the door of the church. And my husband, kind of not as bad, definitely not as bad. Faith pays attention much more. And I can't get my 21 in. That's another story for another day. We're working on getting him back. And then even my 18-year-old, like he plays in a life teen band. And this morning, I'm driving to work and I said, how was mass yesterday? And he starts talking all about how his instrument played and the music. I said, how about the religious aspect of mass? But when they were younger, they were just demonic. And so much so that my husband insisted we bring them to church, but I joined the choir so that I could be up in the choir loft and he could deal.
Oh my goodness.
I'm a horrible human being.
I didn't say that.
My husband did. So how were your children? Because they're in that age now. Like, how do you manage math?
Jacob is very social. My little guy, who turns 2 at the beginning of March, is very social and will often entertain the people all around us. And I have to just accept the fact that he is my little extrovert and that he will say hi during the consecration, and that maybe it's not so annoying to everybody else that he's giving me a cardiovascular workout. Or my husband. I mean, if he's not screaming, really, is there any harm in it? I mean, I think some of it is. Like, when I go to mass and it's perfectly quiet and I have no kids, I'm as distracted as I am when there's somebody using me as a jungle gym. So maybe the problem isn't the kids. So I got to say, they're really good in mass. My little guy, the parish we attend has these like little kids bulletins that are like an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper folded over. It's got little. And so he takes a pen. He gets 2 of them every time and does them. And it's hilarious because it keeps him busy, and he stands when he stands, and he, you know, kneels, and he knows to kind of follow along. Kind of gives him something to do so that he's not constantly, you know, mom. So, and my older kids, I'm always surprised, like my 9-year-old, my 11-year-old, when they come out, we just got a new priest. We bought him at the corner store. It's just the way I said that, kind of, wait, what? Paris got a new priest. And one of his first homilies, he shared that his mother died when he was five. And one of my 9-year-old daughter, who I was pretty sure just kind of tunes out during mass, came out and said, isn't that so sad about father that his mother died?
Wow.
And I was like, oh, who knew? They listened to the homily. Huh. No. So I guess I've been the person in the back, and I often still am because I have a toddler.
Yep.
And sometimes I catch myself paying attention to different things when you're in the back than you are when you're supposed to be praying and focusing on Jesus. My kids, I wouldn't call them demonic at all, although I would be tempted sometimes. So yeah, they're not bad. And I think it's indicative of probably how I am too during mass that, you know,
I think faith was the most difficult, and that's what made me think of this delaying, the don't delay discipline. And I think a lot of people feel like you have to discipline immediately because the kid won't remember what they did and what you're disciplining them for, but that's bull. And I'm so glad that Dr. Ray said that a little more eloquently than I just did. But there were days where we would just have to leave mass with her. Like, she would just be, for somebody who was deaf, she understood that making noise stressed us out, or it was disruptive. She just got that. So sometimes we could go to the back, but she would just melt down, scream and cry. And, you know, and there is a point where you have to just say, okay, I'm losing this battle. I need to go. So we would go sit in the car, and I wouldn't give her any attention. I wouldn't look at her. I wouldn't talk to her. I wouldn't do anything. But when we got home, I'd still give her a timeout. She had to go to her room for that 1 minute per age, or until she got herself back together. And, you know, someone would say to me, well, that was ridiculous. You already punished her in the car. But I felt like that wasn't a complete punishment. Like, for me, that she still needed.
Right.
So she doesn't do it anymore. And it was a short, I wish it probably wasn't as short as
it probably felt like it was forever.
Forever. But like every week we're going, like, I'm trying to sign. Do you know what a deaf kid does, Sarah, when they don't want to hear their mother? They just close their eyes.
Oh, eyes. Yeah, that does make sense, right? Like they
just close their eyes. My other two sons who are hearing are like, that's not fair. I want to just close my eyes and make mummy disappear.
Right.
Nice.
So
do you have any times where you've had a delay discipline? Do you think that's good advice or bad advice?
Well, especially as they get older. I mean, I think like with Jacob, wouldn't do any good. Right. But when they get to a certain age, they remember. Like, if they can remember that tomorrow's my birthday, or, you know, what we did this morning, they understand that this is a consequence. And I think it's good to teach your kids that there are consequences, good and bad. Right. And what is discipline but teaching them that?
Mm-hmm.
And I can think of one in particular with my 12-year-old, and she just had a moment and was very rude. And my husband came home and we were all the other three kids and I were in the living room, and he took her into the back and he kind of lit into her and punished her and, gave her, you know, this is what's going to happen next. And we were like, wow. So no, I don't think it's bad. I think it's what happens, you know, like if you don't study, you get an F in school, you know, same kind of thing.
And there's also another, the discipline with faith at church and then again at home kind of fell into this idea, number 16, don't do double jeopardy. And he's talking about that law that you can't be tried twice for
same. Oh, yes, you can.
Exactly.
Yes, you can. If you hurt your sibling or your, like, and... that's so ridiculous. Like, who among us doesn't have like a pet sin or a pet? Like, you don't go to confession more than once for the same thing. I mean, we're all human, right? So we're going to have repeat occurrences. And maybe it's a way of teaching your child that, like, yes, if you do this, this happens more than once. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And he also talked about, you know, that wait till your father gets home kind of adage. Like, I grew up in the 70s. That was one of the shows that was on. It's a cartoon, wait till your father gets home. And there was that discipline that mom gave. And then
I use that all the time. In fact, I have my my kindergartner, sometimes he'll do something. He'll go, "Oh, you're not calling dad about that, are you?" Like if I get up, I'm like, "Yeah, I should." Yeah, but there are times when I have, like, I have one child in particular, a very strong-willed child, and I will like call my husband and go, "I'm when you get home, I need you to address this with this child because it is not going to sink in from me." Or yeah. I'm not going to feel like it sinks in. Like I'm sure when she's an adult, I will be able to look at that child and say, you know, but in my mind, some of it is the age. I know. Parents of teenagers don't even talk to me right now. I know.
No, and I think that one of the things we were going to talk about that I kind of skipped over was that it's a stage, and that if you look at it just as a stage and don't address it, that that's a big mistake.
So I think
that what you're saying makes sense to me. Like it may be age appropriate, but it doesn't make it appropriate, as Dr. Ray says in his book.
Right. You know what? Like locking yourself, like being a jerk to people, that might be a stage, but you know what? It's not an okay stage.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Sarah Reinhart, snoringscholar.com, and we're looking at the book, Advice Worth Ignoring, How Tuning Out the Experts Can Make You a Better Parent. We're going to go to a break in just a moment. But while we're on break, hey, go visit breadboxmedia.com and learn about becoming a friend of the show. You're listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media, and we'll be right back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Welcome back to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. Before the break, I asked you to go to breadboxmedia.com and find out about friend of the show. And then the music started and I didn't have time to tell you what that was. As a friend of the show, you're helping support keeping Allison, me personally, on air at A Seeking Heart. If you go to breadboxmedia.com and click on A Seeking Heart tab, you'll see the benefits you reap from becoming a friend of the show. You get either a little prayer squirrel, little adorable prayer squirrel that you can put anywhere, and every time you see it, it's supposed to help you remember to pray, or a handmade rosary bracelet. You also get extra entries in every giveaway that I give, and we'll be rolling out the new 2017 giveaway this week. I got a whole pile of books that I need to get out of my office, and you get to reap the reward of that. You also get to be part of a once a month, last Wednesday of the month, Google Hangout. That's what it's called. I usually have it written in front of me, but anyway, Google Hangout. They're very fun, and I'm so appreciative to those who have already stepped up and become a friend of the show. You're also a part of every rosary that I pray. So if you want some prayer support and you want to help keep A Seeking Heart, me, Allison Gingras, personally, on air. It's not for Breadbox. It's personally just becoming a friend of me and this show. Please go to breadboxmedia.com today and learn more about friend of the show. And a friend of the show that I personally care about here today is Sarah Reinhart. That was a terrible, terrible.
That was hilarious because I'm on the website right now looking at it, and it looks like friend of the show is a generic Breadbox Media thing, not a thing for your... Like, well, you can click it at the top and be a friend of, like, every show.
Well, you can be a friend. You know, when you get deeper into it, you actually
pick. Yeah, I do see that. But you have to go to your site. Like, you have to click shows and then Breadbox Media shows. And you're the first one. Brilliant use of alphabet there, Allison.
Thank you very much. Always start with A. Whenever you're going to name something, start with A. It wasn't on purpose, but it really worked out nicely. So Sarah Reinhart and I, my guest today, my friend of the show, but not that kind of friend of the show, is...
Oh, I see how you are now.
Yeah. See, I was such a terrible transition. But anyway, she is over at snoringscholar.com. And today we're talking about advice worth ignoring, how tuning out the experts can make you a better parent. Funny, very entertaining and insightful book by Dr. Ray Gurundi, Servant Books, Franciscan Media. And the idea I wanted to dive in with you now is that don't make the older help with the younger. And one of the greatest examples I have is from my parish priest when we, a couple years ago, we were at a different church, and he was one of, I think, 7 or 8. And he talks about caring for his little brother and it, how much he loved it, how much he relished it. And he feels like it was how he was able to make the decision to become a priest. No, not because he hated taking care of kids, but because he'd gotten that experience that he didn't feel like he was going to miss out on anything becoming a priest. And I'm not saying that you miss out on a life of chastity of becoming a parent, but that just always stuck with me. So when we adopted Faith, she was 3. I had a 10 and a 13-year-old, and you better believe I put those two to work. I thought, you know what, I should have adopted the 13-year-old first and then had babies, because you had like a built-in babysitter. It was awesome. Now you have a variety of ages.
So, but part of my problem, like, so I have, my oldest is 12 and my youngest is almost 2. So she was about 10 when he was born. And it was funny because, well, none of my kids have really been planned per se, but he was really a surprise in a way that, and so my oldest was really pretty excited, and it was the first time I actually had, I had a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old and then like a preschooler. So I only had one in diapers at a time, which was actually nice. All of them are about 3 years apart. Like I've never been, and God has spared me that particular challenge. And I'm glad, because honestly, one at a time is plenty. Having kids right on top of each other wouldn't have been good for any of us. But that said, one of the things that happened with my youngest that I would have never, he couldn't cry. He would cry, make noise. Somebody'd be in there picking him up. And so he was almost a year old when I have a friend who has 6 kids at a basketball thing. She goes, Sarah, you need to read this book. So I actually got the ebook and read. I didn't read it. I skimmed through it, but it was like this, you have to let your kid cry it out. And I have not done that with any of my children, because they all learned to go to sleep. And he just did not learn to go to sleep. So we had to teach him, over a year old, how to sleep. Like how to like soothe himself back to sleep. And he's still, and I joke that he's kind of difficult the way my oldest was kind of difficult. And they have very different personalities, but sort of just the way they go to sleep, and they're really light sleepers. Like if you tiptoe into his room, and so he shares a room. The olders, but I find my older two are girls, but even my boy, my kindergartner, they love helping me. Yeah. Like they love it. Like it's not, I mean, there are times when I do look at my 12-year-old and I'm like, all right, you're watching the baby, and I'll take the other two because she can help with the baby and there won't be fighting, but with the ones closer to her age, I wouldn't necessarily put her in charge of them, because it'll just be tattling when I get home. That's just recognizing how your children get along. But no, I find they love, and I think, like, my girls know how to change a diaper. I really learned how to change a diaper when I had kids. I wasn't the babysitter kind of kid, and I still am not, but I mean, she's kind of learned some things. They've learned things, you know, like they've learned that, okay, if I hold a baby this way, or this is how you soothe them. And I think they've learned too, that they like babies, which kind of cracks me up, because I don't.
I don't either. That's so funny. I'm pretty convinced.
I like other people's babies. I like the idea, but I'm not the person who's gonna be like, oh, let me hold that little baby. I'm getting more that way, which is cracks me up, but it's not, I don't know.
I'm convinced that the Lord sent me a 3-year-old because he knew me and babies that just don't, like, I'm the parent that would pick up my child and be like, wow, you weigh like 20 pounds more than you did this morning. And then go, oh, it's because your diaper has absorbed.
Doesn't mean it holds 20 pounds.
Well, it did to me. I mean, I wasn't a neglectful parent, but I would be more like playing with them and giving them adventures. But I wasn't like that really good. I would spend a lot of the time feeding them, going, I can't wait for you to be able to do such and such. And my husband and I tease about that. We kind of like rush them through their infancy because we couldn't wait for them to like do things with us and mm-hmm. we're terrible. But the Lord knew that. He knew our heart's desire, and he sent us a 3-year-old. And she was in pull-ups because in China, I don't know if you know this or not, but in China, their toilets are in the floor and they give their children split pants. They go from front. Yeah. There's a split in their pants from front to back, and they stand over the little toilet and they squat, and that's how they go to the bathroom. So they don't wear diapers. Like they gave her to us at 3 years old. No, in the split pants. So having to teach her how to use a Western toilet was very interesting. So I ended up putting her in pull-ups because I thought, this is going to be a long trip. We still had 2 weeks left in China and different places. So, yeah, I still have them. I kept them. Like, you can't throw those away. They were horrendously disgusting. But, yep, that's how. So the first time I had to put her on a Western toilet was quite interesting.
Oh, and it was really cold. And, oh, my, I can just imagine. No, that's like one of those things you don't. Probably nothing prepares you for that moment.
No. Either. Probably why she hated me so much. It took me.
Well, I mean,
to warm
all kinds
her up.
Of things. Your I'm sorry to your daughter will be something like, I'm sorry I made you sit on a Western toilet. I'm sorry, honey, that I potty trained you. I love that. You know, he talks in here in this section that you pointed out about one family sweetening the pot for potty training. And I've totally done that with my kids. Like my oldest daughter, we use some of that baby signing language, and it really helps in the toddler years when they can't quite express themselves. It gives them a way to communicate. And my oldest daughter sort of single-handedly taught the baby different signs so that he could communicate. And I got to tell you, I love that she did that. Mm-hmm. I love that she took the time, because he is the kid who gets run around because, you know, he's almost 2. And even though he has nap requirements and sleeping requirements, we're still going to varsity basketball games mm-hmm. and travel basketball games and who knows what else. And he gets dragged all over, but, you know, they help with it.
Do you know that's a statistic out? As a deaf parent, of course, I've done a lot of learning sign language and reading about the deaf culture. And there is actually more parents of hearing children that teach their children sign language than the deaf.
You know what? I want to learn to actually sign like a grown up someday. Like, didn't you say you're going to teach that sometime? Like, I need to come like when I don't have, I'll come hang out with you and like have you teach me to sign or do. I'm sure there's like an online thing, but I actually, and my oldest daughter said something like, Mom, I think I want to learn to sign too. And I'm like, I just really think that
it's beautiful language. And there's some online ways.
And when you see, like if you go to Mass and you watch them signing it, that is emotional to watch people. To watch them communicate things like that, like if you're at something that has a signing person.
Well, I interpret the Mass
for
her.
But you know what I'm trying to
express. No, you're saying it right. Yep. I interpret the Mass for my daughter every Sunday, and people come up to me still, you know, 7 years later. I love watching you. I'm like, but what's happening on the altar is so much more important and beautiful. Like Jesus is appearing. They're like, yes,
if you're
that's
leading
what they said.
Them to that thing on the altar. I mean, it's sort of like the discussion of music at Mass. Oh.
Well, we're at the end of our time today, Sarah. That's why I love that you come back every month. Next month, Sarah and I are going to talk about Sonia Corbett's new book, Fearless. Very excited about that. Sarah, thanks for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
You have been listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.